Hello, my name is Robin. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Robin.
Hi, everybody.
Will you please join me in the serenity prayer?
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Welcome, everybody. We're glad you're here. You take a seat in this room. Let's see. Welcome to the workshop steps. Excuse my voice, it's hoarse. Steps 9 and 10 of Overeaters Anonymous. My name is Robin. I'm the guy who brought it all together. And we have Roberta is going to be the first leader of the workshop. Our first leader will be Corey, sharing on steps 9 and 10.
Okay.
You want to repeat what they are? Could you read it? Or
sure.
Okay.
Thank you. My apologies for being late, but I'm glad to be here. My name is Corey, and I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Corey.
So step 9 is made direct amends to such people as possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. And step 10 is continue to take personal inventory, and when we are wrong, promptly admitted it. Can you all hear me?
Not really.
It's a little hard. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I'll do the best I can, and just raise your hand if you can't hear me, and I'll speak up. How's that?
Better.
Okay. Or I could stand, I suppose.
I have a chair right here if it's easier.
That's fine. Okay. How long do I speak for?
20 minutes total.
Okay, sounds good.
I'll keep track. And what do you want?
10, 5, and 5 is good.
10, 5, 10.
Okay. So again, my name is Corey. I'm a compulsive overeater. I've been in OA since late 80s. I think I came into my first program in August of 88, and then about 9 months later I came to OA. I didn't really start discovering the magic of this program until I started working the steps. And when I wanted to start working the steps, I liked certain steps. Like, I liked the idea of an inventory. I really liked the idea of amends. And part of the reason that I liked the idea of amends was because I thought you apologize and then people think that you're so amazing, you know? And it didn't occur to me until I've worked the steps through many times where I started to see how much my ego really was involved in everything that I do, that the whole reason that you make your amends after you look at your inventory and give it away and talk about it with someone else and look at your character defects and ask God to help relieve you of them, the whole reason that the ninth step is after that is because it's not about our egos. It's about many things, but it's certainly not about me and what you think of me. And I didn't know that. I didn't. Maybe people said that in the beginning, or I heard people share about that. But I didn't. When I thought about making ninth step amends, I just thought, oh, you're going to think I'm so amazing, and then I'm going to, you know. And I thought it was sort of going to make me feel better about myself in ways that I didn't feel very good about myself. And while that's happened, that's kind of been a byproduct of some of my amends. And some of my amends, I didn't get what I wanted from people. And it was very uncomfortable. But I had looked at my character defects. So when I went home and I was uncomfortable, I was able to go, ooh, there's my ego. There it is, you know, and reach out to others and talk about it. And so anyway, that's my pitch about why I think the steps are the way they are in order. I'm not going to talk much about the 10th step, but I'll give my 2 cents, and then I'll go back to some of the more, some of the more powerful amends that I've made. And I have not made all my amends, by the way. I just want to admit that so that I get my ego out of the way from having you think that I've done this step perfectly. So my experience with the 10th step, I've done it in many different ways with sponsors. I've done a written 10th step every day during certain periods of time with certain sponsors, and then I haven't. And lately, the way that I've been working the 10th step is kind of, it sort of works me. Like the 10th for me is the 4th step through the 9th step. It's like a mini inventory. You know, if I need to talk about it with somebody, looking at my character defects and asking God to remove them, and then making amends, you know, promptly admit it. So I have one sponsor who had me every day write three things I was grateful for and three things that I did well. And that was great. I think for me, it's just the whole concept of it being steps 4 through 9. And I know, because I come to enough meetings regularly still, and I am in contact with program people and in touch with elders for me in program, I kind of know when I get that feeling in the pit of my stomach that there's something maybe about an interaction that just hasn't gone right. And then I do that 4 through 9. Like I look at, ooh, okay, so what was my part in that? You know, did I say something inappropriate? Did I maybe say something appropriately, but I wish I had said it a different way? And what was that about for me? And so I just do that. I mean, and I haven't been doing written 10 steps for a while, but I do that all the time. And so consequently, because I'm married, I'm making amends, you know, on a somewhat regular rhythmic basis. So let me tell you more about the 9th step. So that's my paying homage to the 10th step. So like I said, I really thought the 9th step was all about apologizing to you all so that you could think that I was amazing and I would feel better, and then I would be relieved, sort of like purging, right? Like, I'm not a bulimic, but it's sort of that feeling. Like, if I apologize to you, then I can just let it go. And what I've learned over time is that isn't what lets things go, that you think I'm so awesome. That's like a chicken McNugget. Like, 10 minutes?
10.
Okay. Like, that's like a chicken McNugget will make me feel soothed for, like, 10 minutes, you know, and then the feelings come back, and that's how kind of you thinking that I'm awesome, that's how that is for me. It's like a little bit of comfort food. And so I want to talk about two particular amends that I made that were really profound. So one was when I was a kid, I took money from one of my teacher's purses a couple times. She was my gym teacher, and I would go use the restroom in the office area where her office was, and her purse was there. So one day I went in and I took some money out of it. And I did that a couple times, and I don't know if she ever knew or not, but many years later, when I was starting to work the steps thoroughly in order with a sponsor, I went back to my grammar school, and I asked if I could see her, and she happened to be free. It was like all the stars kind of aligned that day, and I wrote her a check, and I said, you know, when I was your student back in the 80s, no, back in the 70s, I took some money out of your purse a couple times, and I wanted to let you know that, and I wanted to let you know that I've come to pay you back. And she said, you've come to make amends. And I said, yeah. And she said, are you in a 12-step program? And I said, yeah. And she said something about, oh, you know, that's so amazing, but which was great. That's what I lived for when I made amends before all my other steps, but it wasn't, like, that wasn't what fed me. What fed me was that I had made restitution on something that I had carried around for a really long time. And that was not my money. Even though it was probably a total of $5, it wasn't mine, and I had kept it all those years. So she said to me, after we chatted about that for a while and making amends, and I had just had major surgery, so we talked about that, and we connected a little bit about life, she said, by the way, do you know anything about Overeaters Anonymous? And I said, actually, I do. And she said, I really need that program. And I said, so do I. And I'm there. And she said, could you take me to a meeting sometime? And she lived really far from me, so I sent her a meeting list and offered to come join her. And she never called me, but maybe she went to a meeting, you know. I'm hoping, if that's what she needed. If her spiritual place is to be here, I'm hoping that this is where she found it. So I got, like, although it was great to have this human connection with this person that I used to be my teacher, and I got to make amends and not carry that around anymore, I also got to be of service to somebody else who coincidentally needed Overeaters Anonymous and coincidentally had been but hadn't been for a while and had been thinking about it again, and then it was just time and the stars just aligned for the two of us. So that was one of my amends that I've shared about that before, but that one is one when I think about amends, I always think about that one. And then there was another amends that I made. This was more like an amends at the end of doing a 10th step. And I have a friend who, very, very dear friend of mine, and she and I had an altercation one time, and I said some things that felt really justified in saying, because probably my ego was involved. And she said to me, you know, what you said hurt my feelings. And I said to her, well, I don't understand why that would hurt your feelings. And she said, thankfully, she's got a program and she works it. And she said, what you said hurt my feelings. And so a couple weeks went by, we didn't talk. And then we set up a time to talk. And I said to her, I said, you know, I never would hurt you. And she said, she just kept on saying, what you said hurt my feelings. And then I left, you know, and thought about it for a few more weeks and then made an appointment to meet with her because I was feeling so angsty about it, so anxious. And I said, we met again. And I said, you know, I've asked a bunch of other people and their feelings wouldn't have been hurt either. I'm wondering if you could explain to me why your feelings were hurt. And she said, you know, what you said really hurt my feelings. Thankfully, she's got this program and she works Al-Anon. So she had like this double whammy. And I said, I know your feelings were hurt, but you know, you have to know that I would never hurt you intentionally. And she said, what you said hurt my feelings. You know, she just was sort of broken record. And at some point I finally got it. I think when I realized that this friendship wasn't going to happen if I didn't, and I said, I'm sorry for what I said, but you know, I would never hurt you. She said, I forget what she said to me, and I said, I'm really sorry for what I said, but, and she said, stop right there. And I said, but you have to know. And I learned from that. Finally, what I got was, I said to her, you know, my feelings wouldn't have been hurt if you had said that to me. And she looked at me and she said, and you and I are not the same person. And I got it. Like, I got, here I was trying to justify that I would never intentionally hurt a friend. But what I missed was that I hurt my friend. And so when she said that, she said, you and I are not the same person. And I thought, oh my God, I've hurt my friend's feelings. You know, I got it. Like, I got, that's what she's saying. That's what she kept on saying to me. What you said hurt my feelings. And I was able to just look at her and say, oh my God, I just got it. I am so sorry that I hurt your feelings. And I didn't, there was no, like, I didn't even feel internally that, but do you still like me? But do you, you know, but do you know that I wouldn't mean to hurt you? I thought, like, somehow in her saying that and in me realizing, oh my God, I've hurt somebody's feelings. Maybe my feelings would or wouldn't be hurt, but that's not even the point. The point is, this is somebody that I care about deeply and I hurt her feelings. End of the story. And I apologized, and it was like my ego, like God reached in and like pulled out my ego and like put it over there. And I just was able to, whether or not that was my dark side, you know, whatever that was, I hurt somebody's feelings and I really got it and I really apologized, and it was the end of the story. And my friend and I hugged, and that, it was over. Like that, we have still an amazing friendship, and that conflict was over. And that was sort of like one of those living amends, and I got it. And so that was like maybe 2 years before I met my wife. And five, okay. And so so my wife is a sober alcoholic, and I don't think she'd mind me saying that if you ever meet her, but there were times in our dating years that that I felt like saying, I mean the content of what I said to my friend that really hurt her feelings doesn't super matter, but I felt like saying something similar to my wife when I felt I don't know, when I got angry, I felt like saying these things. And it was because I had this interaction with my friend where I really got to see that it isn't about how I would react to something, it's about how someone else would react. That I didn't say things to my wife that I would have, that I would have needed to make amends and have to relearn that lesson, because I got it. I got it so profoundly with my friend, and so it was such a God experience in that moment when I went, oh, dear, I've hurt your feelings, you know, end of story. And so, I, you know, and that's pretty awesome. And I think the amends that I haven't made, there's some big financial amends that I haven't made. And I'm in a position, my father died a couple years ago, and I got some money from his estate. And I'm in a position to make those amends now. And I'm looking for a sponsor. I haven't had one for a little while, and I'm looking for a sponsor to make all of my amends. I feel like with the profound nature of how I felt and what happened in my relationships in the world, after I started to make those really big, profound emotional amends, I first of all, I don't think I'd be married today if I hadn't learned that lesson about me being different from you. Like me, my feelings are my feelings, your feelings are your feelings, and if I step on your foot in a way that, you know, that I wouldn't necessarily feel it, it's still, you know, I mean, it's everything I just said. So I think that was like the beginning of me. I always, when I was new in program, I remember, well, relatively new, I went to this women's sexuality meeting on Monday nights, and there were all these really cute little women who were doing all this dating, and I thought, oh my God, like, how do you, I had no idea how one does that, goes out in the world and like dates and flirts and, you know, sit across from somebody that you don't really know and like create some sort of a connection to see if there's a deeper connection. And after I started making some of those bigger amends, I started dating like crazy. And I started to become more aware of what is important to me, what isn't important to me, what can I tolerate, what can I not tolerate. You know, there were things for me that were intolerable in people in terms of a partner. Like, I can have friends who don't like cats, but if you don't like cats, like if my wife didn't like cats, we wouldn't be married, just because I have cats and I love my cats. And so I got to start to see, like, what were my deal breakers. Before her, I had been in a relationship with someone who was allergic to cats, and I would have to wash my clothes and not put them on the bed and then go see her, and then it's like I compromised myself all over the place. And I think in starting to have integrity in my relationships through the ninth step, I stopped compromising myself. Someone once said to me that I went to a Catalina retreat one year, and she said that when she made her list of amends, she listed all the people, she put herself at the top, then she listed all the people, and then when she started her amends, she started at the bottom. And when she got to the top, she realized that she had already made amends to herself. And I think about when I first came in, I thought, I haven't really hurt people. I'm kind of the only one maybe I need to make amends to. And as I started to go through life and really be conscious with my fellows, I started to see that definitely there were things that I needed to make amends to myself for, but those were more living amends. Like, I don't need to go buy myself a new pair of shoes because I've, you know, had a really stressful week and not taking good care of myself. Like, that's not an amends. You know, that's self-medication. The amends for myself are living in working these principles in all my affairs. So, thanks.
Okay, thank you, Corey. Okay, our next person to share will be Roberta on step 9 and 10. Thanks.
Thank you.
How would you like to get thirsty when I...
Oh, yeah. How would you like to talk? It's okay. Just let it roll. Just tell me when it's over.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Roberta, a grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater.
Hey, Roberta.
Hi, everybody. I'm really happy to be up here and in a position to be able to share with you. I'd like to start with just giving you a little bit of background. I've been in OA since 1979, so it's been a long time, 34 years. I came in August, and I was 240 pounds. I was married. I had two kids. I was commuting. I lived in Long Island, so I was commuting into the city at the time, and I had one pair of black pants and various muumuu-type loose tops, and the pants were all rubbed down at the thighs, and it was a miserable commute because the Long Island Railroad would be crowded, and I would never take a middle seat because I couldn't sit in one seat, so a lot of times at the end of the day, I would choose to stand rather than sit in the middle. And on the outside, things looked great. I had a husband, I had two kids, but I was so miserable inside. I was angry at the world. I blamed the world. I was resentful at everything and never saw my part in anything. I was a victim. My parents' lifestyle made me heavy. And the first time I came into the rooms and I heard God, it was kind of, oh, I don't like that word. I came in pretty much an agnostic. I don't think I was ever an atheist, but certainly without knowledge and an agnostic, because I grew up in a Jewish background, but the holidays were what we celebrated. The food is what we celebrated. The tradition is what we celebrated. God wasn't in the mix at all. And thank God, through staying around and keep coming back and perseverance, now God is very present in my world and in my life, and I'm so grateful. So I came in, I got a food plan, I called a sponsor, I did what you told me to do, I did my fourth step, my fifth step, I worked through, I lost 100 pounds in less than a year and was, you know, recovered, happy, joyous, and free, and so I thought. At that time, I didn't have a God in my life. I felt like the rooms were my higher power. I knew that I could do something in the group that I couldn't do alone. But after a year and a half of it wasn't even a year and a half of maintaining the weight. It was maybe 6 months of maintaining the weight. I started to pick up again and to go back. And one thing that I'm so grateful for, and I really don't understand why, is I never gained back. Because before this, I've been on a zillion diets and always gained back at least that much, usually more. And with Overeaters Anonymous, I was always able to keep off about 50 pounds. I gained back about 50 pounds, maybe 60 at one point. And then the next, and I kept going to meetings. I went to 3-4 meetings a week. And I knew there was something here because I could see the spirituality in some people. They just had a peacefulness about them that I never had in my life. I always wanted to be at the other table. I always wondered what I was missing. You know, I was never in the group that I wanted to be in. I didn't get into the high school sorority, didn't get into the college sorority. So that was a pattern. And here I saw people who were just peaceful and happy with themselves and content. So I wanted what you had, and it escaped me. I kept coming to meetings, and I had some periods of absence and some periods of relapse. And finally, about 11 years ago, I was already retired from my job and read a book, and it said, you know, when were you happiest in your life? When were you most alive? And I realized it was the early days in the 79, 1980, 1981, when I was really in program. I came back, got a spiritual sponsor, and have developed a relationship with a higher power, and that has been all the difference, because I've been able to keep abstinence these 11 years. The food obsession is removed most of the time. I am so grateful. I have totally changed my attitude. And feel that I am happy, joyous, and free now. I am peaceful. I am recovered. The big book says we are 100 men and women who have recovered, and I believe that we have recovered. I know that I'm not cured. On a daily basis, I get a spiritual reprieve when I keep in fit spiritual condition, when I align myself with God's will, and when I stick to my food plan. So through the years, I've worked step 9 and step 10. And at the first step 9 I did, I needed to make amends to my parents. My father was not any longer living, so I did write him a letter at his graveside. And I loved my father. He was like the light in my life. And at one point, after I stopped teaching, I was sort of the cashier in the restaurant. He owned a little luncheonette on 47th Street in Manhattan, and I worked for him there. And I was taking things out of the cash register. I was helping myself to some money. And here I stole from the person that I felt dearest to, most connected to, I loved the most. And that was a hard amends for me to make. And he just sort of shrugged it off. You know, you never know how someone's going to react to your amends. And my sponsor told me, it doesn't matter how the person reacts. You're doing it for yourself. I'm cleaning off my side of the street. I need to make direct amends to people. You know, and it says wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. So I've made amends to my parents. I made amends to my mom. We had a very fiery relationship my whole life. But the last few years of her life were different because I really loved her. And she still pushed my buttons, but I didn't react. Because I had a program, I didn't have to react to the anger or to whatever she pulled off in me. And she was a wonderful mother. So I was able to make amends to my children, and today I have a wonderful relationship with my son and my daughter. My son lives in Jerusalem. He became a very observant Jew. He's a rabbi. He has his family and 6 kids. He has a totally different lifestyle than I have, but I'm able to visit them, thank God, once, twice, sometimes 3 times a year. I just came back from a trip there, and I thoroughly enjoy it, and we respect each other. This program has given me self-respect, and it makes people around me give me that same respect, because when you treat yourself with dignity and respect, you command it from others. We teach people how to treat us. My daughter moved to Los Angeles a few years ago, and so I made the big leap in August, actually. I had my toe in the water and would come in the winter, and this past August we sold our house on Long Island, and now I'm a Los Angeles girl. And I was telling my friend Annie beforehand, I love Los Angeles, and she said, what is it about it? And I don't know exactly, you know, it's just I feel youthful here, I feel young here, and I'm so grateful. So the amends that I've made, I have a stepdaughter because I'm now in my second marriage, and I used to treat her, to her face I would be friendly, but I was passive aggressive. You know, I would complain that she, when she would put things in the garbage can, now I like laugh at these little picky things that I used to do to her. And I remember when I made amends to her, she cried. You know, I'm the type of person, I was that tornado. I'd go through life and I didn't really care if I stepped on your toes or whatever. And she's a little bit shy and socially, you know, not quite, I guess, adept at it, you know, a little inadequate. And I could just make mincemeat of her, and I did, you know. And now, not that we have the best relationship in the world, because I'm still jealous that she wants to talk to father. That's the relationship she wants. I'm a little jealous that she doesn't really care that much about me. But the truth is that if I want to pick up and talk to her, she's very happy to talk to me. So that cleared up that. The hardest amends, I had done something really that I was very ashamed of. And that came up in my first inventory in 1981. I had slept with one of my best friend's husbands. And I really was embarrassed about it, ashamed about it. I did make amends to her, but she never really wanted to pick up the friendship again, and I can understand why. And but anyway, we were having a 40th high school reunion. I think it was 40th or 50th. And I tried to get in touch with her. We had lost touch. And she had moved to Nashville, and I called. And her mother answered the phone. And it turned out that my friend had passed away. It really upset me, and I didn't have to say anything to her mother. Her mother knew nothing about the situation, but just remembered me from childhood, and her mother was approaching her 100th birthday, and I started to develop a relationship with her mother, and I'd write her letters, and I sent her pictures of Terry and myself, and her mother sent me, I had given her a gold four-leaf clover that said, you know, friends always or something, when she was 16, my friend, her sweet 16, and her mother sent that to me. And I have that to this day. And I felt like God was finally hearing my amends and forgiving me for it. The hardest amends is to myself. I make living amends all the time by changing. I'm not the person I used to be. I'm not the person who walked into this room. But the amends to myself, as Corey said, kind of come through making amends to others. And the amends that I make to myself is by changing my behavior. But that was one that I couldn't forgive myself for it. I'd gone to retreats. I've tried, you know, the Phoenix process where you throw it into the fire and it's gone. Tried and tried, but when I received this little four-leaf clover in the mail, it was gone. You just know when it's lifted. And so I'm so grateful for that. I had to make monetary amends, not only to my father, but I worked for the New York City Board of Ed. And at the end, I was administering and ordering things, and it was one for them, or 10 for them, and one for me. So it started with little, you know, little things that I didn't consider very important, you know, pens and paper, and it ended up with taking home a VCR. You know, it escalated. So I needed to make amends to the system. I called and asked for the principal of my school. She wasn't any longer there, the one I knew. I got the person, and she said, "Don't even go there." Like she, you know, like it's too difficult. I can't accept your money. So I sent an anonymous check for a few $100s. It was never cashed, and I felt okay. I tried. I made amends. You know, a lot of the stores that I used to steal for, because it started with lying about the food. I didn't eat that cupcake, and it went into lying about the money and lying about, you know, and I would go into a department store, and I can remember doing this, and the line for the cashier. I liked the hat, and I wanted to buy this hat. Well, there were 10 people online. Well, I'm not waiting on that line. I'm just walking out with this hat. Or I'd make deals. You know, I mean, I would go into the supermarket, and I had a coupon to returns a rain check. And I'd say, okay, well, if they let me buy 10 of these, because it was only for 4, but there was no limit at the time, then I'll pay for this pack of gum. You know, they didn't let me do it, so I put the gum in my pocket, and I walk out into the parking lot, and all of a sudden I see people running over, picking up $20 bills, and I'm looking, and I realize I had gone to the ATM machine, and I had $300 in 20s that I wore a wallet around my neck, and it had distributed, and I realized, you know, if God can do so much more, take away so much more from me when I'm just doing these petty, you know, I need to have this and I need to have that. So I'm so grateful to learn that lesson, and now I really, I make my amends. And it's not a coincidence that the promises in the big book start on the bottom of page 83. When do they appear? After step 9. After I make my amends, I start having this peace and serenity. I start having the fears disappear, the self-pity disappear. The promises are beautiful. And on the 10th step in making that daily inventory to see how I'm doing, it's a compilation of 4 to 9. You know, do I have any resentments? Am I angry? What do I have to take care of? A lot of it is on the spot. I'll have an attitude. Yesterday I met a good friend. We went to a meeting and lunch, and I used my credit card. She gave me the cash, and I could see she was ready to go at the end. So I felt a little rushed, and so I paid, I got home, and then I went to open my wallet, and I said, oh, I left my credit card at the restaurant. So what came up?
oh, if my friend wasn't in such a hurry. Because I blame, I mean, that's where I go. That is my thinking. That is my negative, whatever that is, thinking. Starting to blame her. If she didn't seem like she was anxious to go, I would have thought about my credit card. And I, you know, cut it off right there, Roberta. Laugh at yourself. Look at you going into the blame mode. And anyway, I called the restaurant. They have the credit card. I'll go back and pick it up. But that happens all the time. I need to make these spot check inventories. If I'm nasty, getting impatient, going through the checkout line because the person isn't doing it the way I think they should do it, and I see my, you know, feathers being ruffled, I can, okay, pause, calm down. You know, you don't, you're not always right. Everyone is different. You see things differently. And I, a lot of times in the morning, I'll speak to somebody and we kind of say, you know, we do 4 G's. What was good about the day? What was a glitch? I need to look at my, you know, my, the negativity that came up, and what are your gratitudes? And I mean, the weather in Los Angeles, being close to my daughter, the strength of program in Los Angeles. I mean, so many gratitudes every day. And then what is my goal for the day? You know, it says in the big book that I'm here to be of maximum service to others. I want to be helpful. I want to be useful. You know, there comes a point in your life, and I think the older you get, maybe the more introspective or thinking about it, you know, why am I here? You know, and my son has very clearly his vision of why he's here, you know, to get close to God and to do it in his specific way. That has not appealed to me all the way, because I found my God in these rooms. My God is a loving, accepting, tolerant, beautiful God. And I know that we each have a piece of God within us. And so I do a daily connecting in the morning. I talk to God, and you taught me how to talk to God. You taught me how to pray to God. That was foreign to me. And now I know that God will be there for me, and when I don't get what I want, it might be the best thing that happened to me. I know that there will be challenges. And, you know, I always said, how could there be a God? People died, Holocaust, blah, blah, blah. You know, and that's all well and good to get on my high horse and be that way. But I want to live in the solution, not in the problem. And if I believe that God will help me through any challenge, through any illness, through anything that I must get to acceptance on, then I can be a peaceful, happy person, and I can be of use, and I can help others, and I can just contribute so much more to this world. So I have to be true to myself. And right now, I'm just blessed that the food obsession has been removed. When I came into program, I got a specific food plan. Now we have a dignity of choice, and people can eat what they want to eat. And I hear a lot in the rooms that I don't eat sugar and flour, and I stay away from my alcoholic foods, and this is great. We've got to know each other. I think the bottom line is honesty. That's the step. That's the principle behind the first step. So if I'm honest, and at this point in my recovery, I can eat anything. Because I eat moderately. I eat with grace and dignity. I eat in a sane manner. I keep in fit spiritual condition. I stay away from high caloric foods. I maintain a healthy body weight. That's my abstinence. It's wearing life like a loose cloak. That works for me. I don't say to go out and try it. I think we're each individual, and we have to find out what works best for us. But I like to share that in the rooms because I don't hear enough of that. And what else can I tell you? There are step 10 amends that are just beautiful. It says how the obsession is removed on a daily basis. When tempted, we recoil as from a hot flame. It says that right in the big book. You know, and it also says, love and tolerance is my guide. That's love and tolerance of others. I have to accept people as they are. My husband will never be who I'd like him to be, because I think I'd like him to be me It's crazy. I mean, I couldn't live with me, but I do tend to be critical and to get into, just complaining. And then I realize I love that story in the big book that Dr. Paul wrote on acceptance is the answer, because if I realize that things are exactly the way they're supposed to be, and I keep my expectations low and my hopes high, we have a wonderful relationship. It's when I want him to be someone that he's not. He's not a very sociable person. He doesn't like to dance. He doesn't like some of the traditions of the religion that I like. But I can do them. I can do them. He allows me to be who I am. In many ways, he's very evolved. So I've learned to live and let live. I've learned that easy does it. And I've learned that there's nothing so good as feeling good about myself. Because when I feel good about myself and love myself, I can love all of you. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you very much. Okay, we're going to have a little break.